We're going to take our family to Naples, Florida. Crystal has some family that lives there, and one of her cousins was graduating, and so we took the family to that. But on the way there, we were kind of go through Orlando, so we thought it'd be cool to stop in at Disney World. You might have heard this place. And so we haven't really gone in a while, and we haven't taken our younger two kids there yet. And so we were going to go. We were just going to go for a day. Going to do a whole day of Disney World. And so we wanted to make it fun and have a fun way of announcing it to them the morning that we left. We also didn't want to tell them ahead of time because, I don't know if your kids are this way, but if you tell them that you're going to do something, they will ask you about it every moment of every single day leading up to it. So the morning that we're getting in the car, we have everything packed in the car, and Crystal put together this scavenger hunt for us to let them know that we're going to go to Disney World. Now Houston, who's our youngest, and he's two, he had woke up that morning and he just didn't quite look right. Like he was just kind of laying there, but it was still pretty early in the morning, so we didn't think too much about it. And so we start the scavenger hunt, and our older two, Ethan and Emma Jane, they're kind of going around and getting into it, but Houston's still kind of just laying on the couch. We're like, come on, Houston, you know, jump in there. Let's go on the scavenger hunt, because we wanted him to be a part of it when they found out they were going to Disney World. So they go to the different places. They finally get to the end part. And Crystal pulls out her phone to record, and we're thinking, this is going to be such a great moment. They're going to be so excited to know they're going to Disney World. And so they read the card, and they start to put it together that they're going to Disney World. And so Ethan and Emma Jane, they're cheering and woo-hooing and excited about Disney World. But Houston doesn't look right still. He's just standing there, and he doesn't look right. And Crystal's filming, and I'm kind of elbowing Crystal because Houston's coughing a couple times as Ethan and Emma Jane are cheering. And just as she turns it off, in the midst of this excitement about Disney World, Houston throws up. And so in my head, I'm thinking, no, and I'm seeing the amount of money we've spent on Disney World tickets and this plan that we had, and thankfully, we were gonna go anyways, even if he was sick. Thankfully, as soon as he threw up, I hope it's okay that I talk about throw up. Yeah, as soon as he threw up, he immediately felt better, right? He kind of got back to his normal self. It was kind of weird, but all of a sudden he was feeling good again. But for a moment, I was feeling a lot of panic. And it was weird because it was like this moment that was awesome and exciting. Disney World was this super great, awesome moment, was followed by a not awesome moment. Later in the week while we were at the hotel, I was watching SportsCenter, and they were telling the story about this golfer. His name was Aaron Wise, and he won this golf tournament. And they said he won like $1.5 million or some crazy amount of money. But what made the news was he wins this golf tournament, and he goes over to hug his girlfriend, and it's on camera. And as he goes in to hug her, he goes in to give her a kiss, and she backs away from his kiss. And so everybody was talking about this and kind of laughing about him getting denied a kiss on television. And to me, as I was watching that, I was like, man, what an awesome moment. He goes from this awesome thing, winning this tournament, to this not awesome thing of being embarrassed on television. And I was thinking about both those things. I thought about how, you know, life is kind of like that. It is a collection of awesome moments followed by not awesome moments. It's, you know, a big high followed by a big low. It's an up followed by a down, followed by an up, followed by a down. It's hills followed by valleys, followed by hills, followed by valleys. And there's a passage I want to look at as thinking about this idea from 1 Kings chapter 20, starting verse 23. And it says this, it says, meanwhile, the officials for the king of Abram advised him, their gods are gods of the hills. That is why they were too strong for us. But if we fight them on the plains, surely we will be stronger than they. Then verse 26 through 27, it says this, the next spring, Ben-Hadad mustered the Arameans and went up to Aphek to fight against Israel. When the Israelites were also mustered and given provisions, they marched out to meet them. The Israelites camped opposite them like two small flocks of goats, while the Arameans covered the countryside. So there's about to be, it seems, a battle taking place. And the Israelite army is kind of small, relatively. It describes them as two flocks of goats, which is kind of a weird description. But the other army, the Syrians, who had lost before to the Israelites, okay, and they were kind of tired of losing to God's people. But they were told, in particular, this would be the way that you'd win. Look at verse 28, okay? They're told, listen, we have seen God work with his people at the hills, but we've never seen him be with his people in the valleys. And so let's go fight God's people. Let's go fight the Israelites in the valley. So verse 28 of 1 Kings 20 says this: the man of God came up and told the king of Israel, this is what the Lord says. Because the Arameans think that the Lord is a God of the hills and not a God of the valleys. I will deliver the vast army into your hands, and you will know that I am Lord. It goes on, verse 29 and 30, for 7 days they camped opposite each other, and on the seventh day the battle was joined. The Israelites inflicted 100,000 casualties of the Arameans, foot soldiers, in one day. The rest of them escaped to the city of Aphek, where the wall collapsed on 27,000 of them. And Ben-Hadad fled to the city and hid in an inner room. He's hiding because he was wrong. Okay, the Syrian army thought that, well, God won't be with them in the valley. He's only with them in the hills. But what the people of God needed to realize, I think what we need to realize, is our God is not just a God who is with us in the hills. Our God is not just a God who is with us on the mountain when things are going great and those awesome moments. Our God is with us in the valleys. He's with us in the not awesome times. God sent a man to tell them that God will also save them in the valley, and you shall know that I am Lord. Our God is a God of the hills and the valleys. And to continue this thought, I want to look at a story for the rest of our time together this morning. And it's a familiar story to you, especially if you've ever been to a vacation Bible school. We talk about this story in children's classes a lot because it's a cool story. There's lions involved. This is the story of Daniel and the lion's den. Now, sometimes when we think about the story, we think of maybe like cute, cuddly lions. Sometimes maybe you think of Daniel as being this young man, but he is not a young man in this story at all. He's actually most likely in his 80s. So he's an older man at this time. And in Daniel chapter 6, we see this king named King Darius. And he's the third king that Daniel has served under. And Daniel has obviously has this reputation about himself, and it's carried over to this new king, to King Darius. So follow along with me in Daniel chapter 6, verse 1 through 4. It says, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. I mean, how awesome is that, right? Daniel has done such a good job. He has such exceptional qualities that he has distinguished himself from everybody else. That's a hill. That's a high point. This is an awesome moment. And Daniel's had a lot of these. I mean, Daniel does this a lot where he separates himself from those around him. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. And verse 5 says, finally, these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God, which that is awesome. What if we were the same way, right? The only way someone could find something to pick at you about was how thorough you were in the way that you served God. Wouldn't that be incredible if that was the case for each of us as well? So we find out about Daniel that he is an exceptional person. But this has caused some jealousy with those around them. And one thing that we notice here, and maybe you've noticed this in your life as well, is that when God raises you up, sometimes people will try to tear you down. But Daniel, who is this man of courage, as we're about to see in the story here, that courage takes place before the moment in the lion's den. It's weird. The story about the lion's den is really just, it's really just one verse that actually takes place in the lion's den. To me, the story is more than just that time where he's in the lion's den. It's all of the time before it. You see, Daniel had made a decision ever before he found himself in the lion's den, ever before what's about to happen in just a moment here. It's kind of like when you get on Google and your search history or whatever, and you type in the beginning of a search. If you've searched that word before or that thing before, it will autocomplete, right? It kind of fills in the rest. Daniel, with the way that he lived his life, it was sort of on autocomplete. He just lived this way because he had always lived this way. He obeyed God. He knows what to do. He doesn't get himself into a situation and ask, well, will I honor God this time? For Daniel, it's what he is going to do because that's how he lives his life. Going on, verse 6 through 8, it says, so the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. And that last part is key. Some might think, well, King Darius is the king. Why can't he just change the law? Well, in the Babylon Empire, you could do something like that. But in the Medo-Persian Empire, once you put something in writing the way that they're putting it in writing, you can't take it back. And so they know what they're doing. The administrators know what they're doing. They're trying to trap King Darius to where he will have to punish Daniel for being the only thing they can catch on him, which is being faithful. You know, sometimes we think when we serve God, which is what Daniel is doing, that nothing should go wrong. I mean, after all, we are serving God. We shouldn't face opposition to that. But that's not the way that it works. And if we're not ready to face opposition during obedience to God, I think we're probably not ready to be used by God either. And so King Darius, he issues this law, says that, you know, if you can't pray to any god other than King Darius for the next 30 days or you go into the lion's den. He agrees to this idea. So what will Daniel do? Will he stop praying? Will he pray silently? You could almost imagine a scenario where you could convince yourself, well, it's just 30 days. I'll just pray silently. I'll go to a dark room. I'll go into my closet where no one can see me and I'll pray. That's not what he does. He keeps praying, and doing so, he risks death. How did he have such bold faith to do this? How did he have such faith to stand strong, even in what potentially is a low valley like this? Well, part of the reason is kneeling to pray is what gives you the strength to stand. In Daniel 6, verse 10, it says, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God. And I like this last part here. It says, just as he had done before. Just as he had done before. You know, oftentimes I think our first response to problems is panic. And that's natural, right? Our first response isn't always to pray. And in fact, sometimes our response of prayer to problems is usually a last resort. I mean, we'll say things like, well, all we can do now is pray, right? We do rely on prayer, but we wait until we've exhausted all of our other options. When it comes to Daniel praying in this case, he's done this all the time. This is second nature to him. And he doesn't announce it that he's going to pray. He just does it. He's done this before. He has pre-decided that he is going to pray. He is going to serve God. He's going to stand strong and remain faithful to God no matter what the circumstances might be. He has decided that he is going to seek God. Before he ever finds himself in the lion's den, the decision has been made that he is going to serve God. It was a pre-decision. If you don't decide before you face the lions, you're going to get eaten alive. Many times I think the trap we find ourselves in, the bad circumstances that we end up in, come from a place where we have not decided ahead of time how we are going to live and act. Daniel had pre-decided what he was going to do. For Daniel, he didn't make decisions based on a decree of a king. He made decisions based on a king above all kings. And I think the same is supposed to be true for us as well. We don't make decisions based on what a king says. We make decisions based on the king above all kings. Don't let the changing standards around you cause you to be unfaithful to the unchanging God inside you. We can't let what's going on around us shape or shake our faith in the way that we're willing to stand up for what it is that we believe in. Daniel stood strong before men because he knelt before God. When life gives you more than you can stand, maybe our resort, maybe what we should do is kneel. And there's all kinds of ways that we can stand up for what we believe in. And maybe you've faced scenarios like this before. Maybe you find yourselves because of maybe the sport that your kid plays. Maybe your family has not been as connected to the church as before. What kind of stand will you make? Maybe at your work, there's some element to it that you could get ahead if you made some decisions that did not require a lot of integrity. Maybe some kind of business deal like that. You have to make a decision before getting into that, what you're going to do. Maybe you're in a relationship with someone, and maybe you know, I should break up with this person because they are wanting it to go in a direction that is not good for me. You have to know before getting into that position what you're going to do. And then questions come up from that. Questions like, what if my child doesn't get to play sports in college? Or what if I don't get the promotion? Or what if I don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend? All of these questions come up when we decide to make stands. For Daniel, his question was, well, what if the lions eat me? But he knew going into that what he was going to do. He had already made his decision of how he was going to live, how he was going to stand strong, and how he was going to remain faithful. There's no guarantee that nothing bad will ever happen to you. We are not living in a Disney movie, okay? The story of Daniel and the lions is not a Disney movie. But what we are promised is this, that when we do what is right, we can always trust God with the results. Now, we know how this story ends. But not all stories end the way that this one does. For Daniel, for 80 years, God had been faithful to Daniel. And so Daniel was going to be faithful to God. And for Daniel, I'm sure some of the thought was, if God saves me, I will trust him. If God doesn't save me, I will trust him. And so it goes on in the story, and in verse 11, we see they find out that Daniel's done this. I don't know if they're watching from a distance or what, but they go and they tattle on him to King Darius. And then in verse 12, you realize that it has to be this way. This is going to happen this way. Verse 14, King Darius makes it clear there's nothing that he can do. He would love nothing more than to not make this happen, but he is forced to throw Daniel into the lion's den. Then we get this passage in verse 16. It says, so the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. Just neat to me that even the king is hoping that God will rescue Daniel. And he recognizes that Daniel continually serves this God. Even the king knew Daniel wouldn't change because he had a God that did not change. Daniel had a faith that took place before the lion's den. Real courage wasn't found just in the moment when he's with the lions. Real courage was found before it. There's a movie that I love. It's probably okay. It's appropriate enough, I think, I can mention this, but The Karate Kid, okay? I love the movie The Karate Kid. And one of the things about the movie Karate Kid is Daniel, who is being trained by Mr. Miyagi, okay? Mr. Miyagi keeps having him do these tasks, and he's like, why are you having me do these things? And so he has him do things like paint the fence and wax on, wax off, right? If you remember these scenes, and he's doing all these things to him, seems very arbitrary and pointless. And he gets so frustrated with it at some point that he decides he's going to get upset with Mr. Miyagi. And it's at that moment that Mr. Miyagi shows him why it is he's been doing these things. And they start to have this fight back and forth, and it starts to click with Daniel. All of these ordinary things, all these moments were preparing me for when it was actually time to use it. And I think the same can be true with our faith as well. We have to be faithful in ordinary times. Or maybe in the times where we find ourselves on these hill, maybe it's being faithful in the awesome moments so that we can be faithful and stand strong in the not awesome ones. So that we can be faithful and stand strong when we find ourselves in a valley. So that we can be faithful and stand strong when we find ourselves maybe facing down some lions in a pit. But those decisions happen before we ever find ourselves in a pit with a lion. Verse 17 through 19, the story continues. It says, a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he couldn't sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and he hurried to the lion's den, just hoping maybe the God that Daniel serves has rescued him. I mean, you can tell King Darius, he's devastated by this. So he's holding his breath, trying to figure out what's going on. Verse 20, it says, when he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Did your God rescue you? That's the question. Did he rescue you? And then verse 22, Daniel has this response. He says, my God, and notice that he starts out with my God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. My God, his God rescued him. He was found innocent in his sight because he had trusted God. And then a little bit later in verse 26, and there's a part here after verse 22 where Darius throws in those tricky administrators who had set this all up. They get eaten by the lions. And then in verse 26, the king issues this new decree based on Daniel's faith. It says, I issued a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and he endures forever. Because Daniel stood strong, even in facing a lion's den, this impacted and affected everyone else in the area. It created this new decree that highlighted how faithful God was. And then in verse 27, our last verse we'll look at, it says, he rescues and he saves. This is part of the king's decree. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He had rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. Rescued. We have been rescued. And for us, I think it's important for us to see that we should walk in constant courage so that when we face an unchangeable situation, we'll have an unwavering faith in an unchangeable God. This morning, maybe you're here and maybe you need to be reminded that God is not just the God of the hills. He's also a God in the valleys. That he's the God no matter what season of life you find yourself in. Maybe the season you find yourself in right now, you are in a valley. This is not an awesome time for you right now. Maybe you've had trouble listening this morning because you are filled with anxiety and stress, sadness, because of things that are happening right now in your life. Maybe you even questioned if God is with you at whatever it is that you're going through right now. Let me first guarantee you that he is, because he is a God of the valleys. And he wants you to come and draw near to him. He's God when it feels like everyone around you is against you. He's God even when you find yourself in a pit surrounded by lions. And the decision to follow him in difficult times, it doesn't start or begin when you find yourself in the valley. It doesn't start or begin when you find yourself in the lion's den. The decision to live for him happens before that. Maybe that decision needs to happen right now for you. Don't wait until you find yourself in the valley to recognize that God is with you. This morning, if you need to make the decision to follow God, to have him rescue you, I want to give you that opportunity. Or if you're here and you need to have some encouragement to see that God is with you in whatever valley or pit you find yourself in, we want to give you that opportunity to be encouraged or to have us pray on your behalf. Whatever way we can help you this morning, however we can encourage you, won't you come now as together we stand and sing.